this culture, people in diverse settings have ways of doing things, ways of thinking, and ways of feeling. And they also employ a variety of discourse to express them. And all these things go to make up the cultures, the culture we are living in. Over the years, more than 350 definitions of culture have been suggested. For this podcast, we think of culture as being both webs of meaning and ensemble of complex of practice, what we do every day. So let's explore how we do things, think about certain things, and encounter all these in our everyday life. So today, let's talk about language and identity. So to start this conversation, we invite some friends to be here today and share their experience in living culture, talking and interact with people, place, and things. So my name is Vera da Silva Sinha. I am Brazilian, also I'm British.
I'm Floris, I'm Dutch.
I'm Christina, I'm Greek.
And I'm Edward, I come from Romania.
Yeah, we all live in Bergen. So, to start the conversation, let's start to know how many languages we speak and how we interact with this language. So I speak Portuguese and I speak English as I speak it now. And also I speak Spanish and a bit of Sweden. And also I speak some another language of my country, right? Not speak, I study. And also I speak a bit about Tupi and Tupi and Amandawa and also Awechi. But I'm still learning all this language and every day, right?
Wow. I speak fewer languages. I speak Dutch, of course, English, and now I would say Norwegian is my third language by now, having lived here for 2 years. And there's a little bit of German and French somewhere hidden behind the Norwegian.
Well, let me get it a bit lower. For me, it's Greek, English, and some Norwegian.
Right, yeah. My mother tongue is Romanian. I speak English and then also some French, a bit of Spanish. And I recently started to study Norwegian, been here for a few months. But I know that some of you here have been living for quite a while. So I was wondering, how did it go for you living in Bergen and learning the language at the same time? What was the experience?
Like I said, I've lived here for 2 years now. And I did two of the Norwegian courses you can do with the university here. And besides that, I learned more, I think, at least in my vocabulary outside the course, on the street or reading books, watching movies, talking to people, sending emails. As soon as I started sending Norwegian emails to my colleagues, everyone just started talking Norwegian to me. So slowly I started to understand the people around me in this country.
Oh, people talking Norwegian to me is my nightmare. Yeah, I can read, but the speaking part is still very low. But yeah, it was very interesting as a process. I've been here a bit longer than Floris. Did all the courses that one can do. So I played a lot with the vocabulary, getting to feel a little bit the language and understand how it is different from Greek or English. But yeah, I still don't have the comfort of speaking it and interacting with people in, you know, everyday settings.
Right. So speaking different languages kind of a challenge, but also emotional, nice, and make you to live different situation. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how we face this different, how we navigate to different language in different contexts, in different setting? For example, when I speak with my friends, right, in the context of academic life, I always speak in English. I'm very easy to express myself in English, right? And sometimes I find difficult to express that in Portuguese. If I am teaching Brazil and I need to think about some situation and theoretically, I always come to English to my mind. And if I'm very tired, sometimes people notice why you are speaking English with me. I don't speak English. I said, oh, sorry, I should be speak with you in Portuguese. So how you live this experience of transition from one language to another in a such way? How you do that?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I think we're all dealing with living abroad. And I think because I moved out of Romania straight out of high school and I spent so much time abroad, being kind of forced to interact in English on a daily basis for absolutely everything, including my personal intimate life, I express myself better in English than in any other language, including Romanian. So, and that goes for academic life, for personal life, for pretty much everything. And when I'm talking to my friends and family back home, I many times have I don't find the words sometimes. So it's like, it's okay with the younger people because we can talk a bit of Romglish, you know, mixed Romanian and English. But, you know, with my parents, I can't afford that. So, yeah. But how does it go for you?
For me, English is also the easiest language for me to talk academically. So if I'm back in the Netherlands and I'm explaining what I'm doing here in Norway, because everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? I will use lots of English words because some of the terms there's just not even a Dutch version of. But on the other hand, when I'm talking about more personal things with people in English, I will struggle to find words which I would easily find in Dutch. So there's definitely different topics I'm interacting in different languages. And then Norwegian is just lowest on all of them. So I will turn back to English a lot when I talk Norwegian with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, of course, the academic is kind of, it's a thing on its own, right? It's its own culture, its own experience that it has become an English thing probably for everyone. But it's interesting to consider the separate parts of life. I think most of it is English. My internal monologue, I talk to myself in English.
Right.
So I do feel that I can discuss emotions and deeper thoughts and kind of more complex issues in English. Mm-hmm. And Greek has taken a backseat. It's a thing to talk with family. And it's challenging to switch, right, to enter this mode sometimes.
Yeah, but think about living in culture. When you think, for example, in your case, it's Greek. Greek has different alphabet, for example. Mm-hmm. So is language for you have one add-on, because we always speak Latin language here. The alphabet is easy to transfer from one to another. What about your experience to transfer this of Greek alphabet and think about Latin alphabet and then transfer that, like you talk to yourself in Latin language, how you talk to yourself in Greek?
Yeah, I'm a bad Greek. The alphabet is interesting. I still use it if I need to keep notes phonetically, like someone's name, right? How to pronounce things. I cannot do that in English. I cannot go into this deep level of sound and rhythm in English, but I can do that with Greek. But we also, you know, I learned the Latin alphabet quite early on, and also internet helped because we were, for convenience, we were writing Greeklies, we call them. So you get accustomed to actually expressing Greek words with the Latin alphabet, which it's interesting for the new generation.
Right, because I think about, for example, the language is very close to my native, my mother language, which is Portuguese and Spanish. I have a very great difficulty to learn Spanish properly, like proper Spanish, right? Because my first language always take over, because it's a close, it's close related. In the end, when I study Spanish, I know the grammar, I know how to do the language, but in the end, when I start talking Spanish, is, and then I realize I'm still not Spanish. I took half Spanish, half a Portuguese, and that's what we call Portuñol, right? Espanol and Portuguese. So how do you do that sometime with the languages you speak, like English Greek or Greek English, or do you do that? Have it happened with you?
I'm mixing
the language, and in a such way it's really interfere of the second or third language you speak.
Yeah, I think well, there are two aspects here. One of them is the obvious Romglish I was mentioning, and the fact that I think interjecting English words, because you cannot find the word in Romanian, for instance, when I'm, and it's not just about academia, it's about expressions. And then the second one is really when, for instance, I speak a bit of Spanish and French, and that's very similar to Romanian. They're all Latin languages, and so the structure is the same, the order of the words is the same, the morphology of a lot of words is the same, but because I think in English, I have a different order, right? So then I mix the orders, and sometimes I can't really identify the word in French or Spanish, even if, like, but when I'm thinking in Romanian, it makes a lot of sense because they're so similar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of stuff I've been dealing with. But I guess maybe
it's very interesting to hear your examples, because both of you talk about your mother tongue, mm-hmm. and your second language, yeah. mixing. And for me, my mother tongue, Dutch, and my second language, English, they don't mix at all. They're completely comfortable next to each other. I can switch halfway a sentence and just keep going. But German used to be my third language, and now I'm learning Norwegian, and German just became impossible. Every time I try to talk German, Norwegian will just go on top of it. And all the words turn into Norwegian, and for every word I have to translate back to German. And there's some words I can't even find anymore. So I definitely have this trouble mixing languages.
That's very interesting that the closer the language is, the more mixing happens, right? And that's kind of the same for cultures as well, right? Cultures that exist next to each other, they just tend to mix in our heads and more than that.
Yes, but exactly. The more we encounter people, encounter language, more way to interact and become bigger. And the good sense, right? Because I don't know if it happens with you. Sometimes I can, when I learn a concept or I learn something and then I transmit to my language and I learn in another language, it seems to be wider. Some expressions seem to be bigger in the meaning than my own language, right? So I can find that a lot in indigenous language as well. And also in another language, I feel some concept or some expression or some way to explain something is kind of open my mind in a such sense, so that they would say, oh, if you speak one more than one language, it seems to be you get bigger and in terms of to understanding more things and think about things and talk about things in a such way. Who is monolanguage, maybe doesn't not able to. So do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of, I really like how you said that, you add on and you expand, right? Because we have so many common things in different languages, common expressions, common metaphors, common images. But even small differences kind of take it into a different level. Norwegians, for example, can just say it in one word and kind of very descriptive, while Greeks would just talk for half an hour to give that expression. Or they would have an extremely specific word that only applies for one tiny thing. So bringing those things together, it's kind of, yeah, this concept can be everything. It can be straightforward. It can be very descriptive. It can be very unique, and all of the above. Okay, now I'm speaking very metaphorically, but I hope you get the point across.
Yeah, in relation to that, we have also one thing many people get in trouble with speaking several languages, is the relationship between language and behavior and the politeness, for example, right? Some language, some cultures, and which reflect the language, direct or indirect request, for example, is kind of things really take people in a lot of trouble. For example, I normally, if I tend to get to the request of my language, normally I wouldn't say thank you so much, right? Because it's already embedded there. But if I say that with an environment of English speakers, they will say I'm rude because I didn't say the thank you and sorry enough, right? What happened with you? Have you had that experience somehow and then in some settings?
For me, definitely.
Yeah. Yes.
So, as you all know, Dutch people can be seen as rude for the rest of the world, and we just think we're very direct. And I've struggled with this in various settings. So, coming to Norway, for example, I've been missing a lot of hints people gave me about, for example, when they give me feedback on my work. In the beginning, I thought everyone is just fine with what I'm doing. Nobody's very excited. Nobody thinks I'm doing very good, but at least I'm doing not doing wrong. Because nobody had big feedback. But then later on, I learned the nuances. So people wouldn't say, I think you should different. They would say, I would have maybe done this, or have you thought of this? So I've struggled with that a bit, mm-hmm. coming to Norway. But now I think I've gotten better at it, which also makes me more sensitive to nuances in my own culture back in the Netherlands. So that's some building of my identity, I guess.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
No, I'm just thinking, are you becoming a polite Dutch?
Not yet.
Let me know if that ever happens.
That would be an effect, right?
Yeah, I think we are quite polite in Greece. We talk a lot, so I mean, yeah, we say please and thank you all the time. But we don't say sorry very much, so that was... It's easier for me to say sorry in English than actually to say it in Greek.
Right. And then, for example, in emails, in academic, right? In English format, I always have to say dear, blah, 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 right? And then now I keep myself say hi. But if I say I email hi to my senior in England contest, it's kind of very, very rude. I broke the whole protocol. But here, if I say dear, people doesn't like it, right? So it's always negotiate wherever you are in terms of language and culture, right? So what about Romania? How about Romanian English Bergen? How you deal with the politeness and your...
Yeah, I would say that in Romania, we are very hierarchical. And that goes not just in a job setting, but also in society, as you were being very polite to elderly people, because mm-hmm. they're wiser, they have a higher standing in society. So there is that hierarchy there, but also in terms of work, job-wise, the same. I wouldn't be able to say hi to a professor in Romania. And when I moved to study in the UK, it was a huge change for me to be able to address my professors with the first name while interacting. And then when I moved to Iceland, it was even less hierarchical. It was a bit too much because, you know, like you said, the Dutch are direct. The Icelandic people are also very direct. And I remember first moving there with a group of PhD colleagues. We were all from different parts of Europe, and we were just shocked at the emails we were getting, as in, hi, you need to do this and that, as like, and that's it, you know, like, no please, no thank you. And we're like, oh my god, they're so rude. But you know, you just get used to it, you kind of like it. It's just people being straightforward, very direct.
Yeah. That's living culture, right?
Yeah. And it's very interesting because, you know, I've thinking the last few months that, I'm listening to myself. I say, you sound so assertive. That's not okay. You know, but it's probably this, that there has been a transition to actually being in this non-hierarchical, straightforward culture for a while. And then you kind of observe yourself at a moment and you have changed. Your identity has changed. Yeah. After being in this language and this kind of interaction.
Right. Right. Talking about identity, that's another part of living culture, which is very interesting, right?
Who are you, Vera?
Who I am, right? I had a very interesting fact to share with you. I was in a conference. I told you I'm a Brazilian, right? And British. And just for everybody knows, I'm not a half a Brazilian, I'm not a half a British, I'm full Brazilian, and also I'm full British. And I'll explain why some people maybe consider themselves half or in between, but in my case, I'm full. So I was on a conference, and I heard, you know, I don't know if half or like the same with you, when I listen, if I'm in the world, somewhere in the world, and I listen somebody speak my language, my mother language, which is Portuguese, it's kind of magnetic, drive me to that person, say, oh my goodness, I need to speak Portuguese and say hi to my compatriotre or my fellows, right? And then I did that in the conference. And then I start speak to the lady. I said, hi, my name is Vera, and I'm here. I'm Brazilian. And then the person looked to me very rude. I said, you're not Brazilian. I said, what? Oh, you don't speak Portuguese. I said, what? Am I speak Portuguese? No, you not speak Portuguese. You speak something else. I said, really? And then it was so rude, right? So my happiness to find a fellowship, yeah, we speak my language was destroyed in that moment. And then I heard some in Spanish. And on the other side, I ran to the Spanish. For the whole conference, it became Spanish for that moment. So, but that's where you see a good example of how language can impact, right? How the way you talk, maybe you are not really, because identities, people ascribe you to identity. They give you identity. And you even didn't notice that, right? But people does that all the time with us. And only a different linguistic difference, they can ascribe you with something. Did it happen that with you in some situation?
I actually have a funny story related to what you said, right, about the conference, but it's actually me doing it. So I was hitchhiking in Romania, you know, back in my youth. And I got picked up by this guy, right? And we were chatting for half hour, just, you know, casually. And at some point, he reveals to me that he's Italian. I was hitchhiking in Romania. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, you're not. Like, no, I'm Italian. I was like, you're not Italian. You're Romanian. It's too good. And then he had to show me his identity card. It was Mario. I was like, okay, like, sorry. But it was just funny that the way, also because I didn't expect someone to speak Romanian, like someone to be interested in speaking Romanian to that level of proficiency. And on the other hand, it happened to me that I was in Romania and people were talking English to me. Mm. I had this guy on a train and he started chatting to me in English. I was like, I speak perfect Romanian, we can do that. And then we talked in Romanian for a minute and then he switched to English again. And he was like, I can't believe you're Romanian.
That's amazing.
That's so funny, yeah. Yeah? What about you, Flores? Do you have anything?
Personally, no. I don't think this has ever happened to me. But my sister, she has lived abroad most part of her life, like you. And now she lives back in the Netherlands again. And a while ago at some work thing, someone told her, like, your Dutch is very good. And she really felt like her identity was not respected, talking about identity, because she thought, I'm Dutch, I'm more Dutch than you, perhaps. You're just telling me that I'm not Dutch?
Yeah, that's a good example. And what about you in Greece?
Yeah, people speak to me in English back in Greece, but I don't feel it as a threat. I actually really like it. It kind of feels like I moved on, in a sense. Mm. It feels safe in my new identity. Mm-hmm. Because even in a familiar environment, mm-hmm. people see it, right? They see that I am a person not living in Greece anymore, and that's great.
Mm-hmm. But how you deal with also identity inside your country? Once you told me about groups and subgroups, how Christina navigate that?
Yeah, so I don't feel connected with the national identity, right? And that it was never a big thing for me. But there were many identities, many social groups, many, you know, hobbies or interests or subcultures that I was part of. And each of them had a different language. And, you know, an example is, we had a couple of friends that we were talking a lot about, you know, literature and poetry. And we really liked, you know, going into that layer of Greek language that is very fancy words and weird words that people don't use very much. And of course, I've lost that, right? I can't really do it. But I'm not sure if, like, the identity got lost and then I lost the language, or if I lost the language and then I've lost the identity. It's kind of a chicken and egg, right? What happened there? Did I lose the group and then forgot the language?
Maybe it's the relationship you have with the groups and how you interact with this group, and that the feeling we call belonging to something, right? And then the group was said, for example, this lady on the conference, they didn't felt I was belong to them, because maybe they my accent with, because I live in different part of Brazil and I live in different place in Europe and I speak so many different language. So that influenced the way I speak Portuguese in the end. And then that relationship between the pure Portuguese and the person who I am was not related to them. And they said, no, you are not Brazilian. You don't speak our language, so therefore you are not part of my group, right? So we do this negotiation all the time, every day, with the people we encounter on the street, the people close. Here we are negotiate things because we are talk about living culture, right? So that's we encounter every day, because culture is not what you see in a museum, but what we do in everyday life, what we think. So in relation to that, another things really use at the moment in everyday life and now is the way you say things, you get behave people differently, right? For example, have you noticed how governments say about hunger or climate change, for example? Climate change is a good example how we see many metaphors. For example, Greta said, I don't want you hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic and act as if the house is on fire, right?
Because it is.
Yeah, so when you put the earth... Yeah, and that's metaphor, house on fire. So what do you think people think about that?
They'll panic, perhaps.
They'll go, what do you do when you get a house on fire, right?
Yeah, that's very strong words. That definitely gives a different message than lots of softer words I've heard governments say or other people say.
Yeah, for example, immigration. Immigration is a big source of a big, metaphors as well. For example, the compared immigration, the swamp of people, flood of people. So flooding is flooding, right? They destroy the
negative
words. So that make people accept or not accept immigration or asylum seekers, all these things. So language is very powerful thing, and we use every day and we don't notice that, right? So do you have anything to talk about sample?
The first thing is it's interesting that the metaphors are both about natural elements, right? Fire, floods, those are kind of things that we have an emotional response in a completely different way than if you say your house is getting robbed. Yeah, okay, who cares, right?
Yeah.
So we do use emotions to manipulate, right? In a good direction, I would personally say, but with Greta, what she's doing, or in a bad direction, right? To say, they're gonna flood you. You have to respond emotionally first. And if you respond emotionally, then you will initiate action. But I think what's the most important part is the house, the element of house, right?
Yeah, it's the power of the metaphor, right? Because yeah. This, when you say a sentence like that, the remits to you with such meaning, which is so strong, because that what make you react. Have you heard about language is action?
Mm.
Yeah. Right? So we have a big example nowadays about that, right? So I heard today morning a very good example of a strong metaphor. What she said, no longer had enough in the tank. Do you know who said that today?
No.
Jacinda, when she resigned to be a prime minister of New Zealand today morning.
Oh. That's true.
And she said, no longer had enough in the tank. So that, when I heard that, I said, wow, that is strong. So that means she can't move anymore. She can't carry on anymore. It's a metaphor, it's moving. Mm-hmm. For, it's a car, right? It's tank, it's a energy. So her energy is, it's like it's a similar metaphor, like a burnout. Mm-hmm. I'm burnt out in the job. So burnout is you have a fire, but you have a energy, and the energy is gone. Right, and the Jacinta metaphor, she's can't move anymore. She can't go anymore. It's stuck. She needs to stop, and she resigned. It's so sad she resigned. But I can also understand. I be a woman, be a mother, be a wife, and in a big job like that, it's not easy. And they have all the political reason as well for that. But I admire her so much. Right, so. And that's the kind of things we see in everyday life and how we face situation, how we do. So any another example you could share with us about living culture and language and identity as a good example of living culture? Do we have any?
I have something. It kind of goes in a little bit of a different direction from what you're saying of kind of... Mm-hmm. Using language to elicit emotions, but also I have experiences of concepts, specific concepts in specific languages or newer concepts changing a lot my interpretation of the situation, right? So I have an example of, being mansplained, right? I heard this term relatively like 5-6 years ago. And I was in a situation, I knew more than the person who kept on talking about what I knew more. And of course, initially, you know, you feel, oh, that's, I'm stupid, right? This person has to describe this for me. And the term came to my head. I said, whoa, wait, is this it? Is this what's happening? Am I being mansplained to? And that changed the entire power dynamic. Mm. I was no longer the idiot. Mm. I had the power there and was able to flip around just because this concept existed, which is not, you know, the concept of a fire, which is something that we have, but it's a new concept that describes the situation and can alter so much our interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many processes that need to happen for that concept to emerge, right? Mm-hmm. For that word to be created in a language, right? So you need awareness in society. You know, you need social acceptance that this is a term, this is what's happening. And I think you're very right to say that, you can also get a pulse of the society through the language, through this kind of concept, and say, okay, this is very different from where I'm coming from, because where I'm coming from, we don't have this, you know? And you see that, I mean, we've seen that also with technology, right? How neologisms, when I was studying Romanian, all of them were related to technology. but none of them were related to the more social side, right? So it's also like, also says a lot about a culture. What kind of concepts and terms do we want to adopt, mm-hmm. and what do we live out mm-hmm. from the public discourse mm-hmm. and our dialogues?
Yeah. And how that evolves over time, right? Because it's not static at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we are. There's so many discussion here. You can go. And it's a good example of how we live in culture, right? At all times, we give meaning to things we do, we say, and that other people do and say. Yeah. Today, we talk about how we accomplish tasks, everyday life, how we do things in everyday life, talking, interacting with friends and family, and so on. We are embedded in culture, and everything we do is shaped by it. From the clothes we wear and how we walk and talk and feeling things, right? So this is our podcast for today, and hopefully we go to explore more ideas some about living culture for the next time. So thank you for listening, and until next time, bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you so much for having us.
Bye. Thank you. Oh, how was it? Yeah, you like it?
I don't think you need to edit this, actually.
Oh my goodness.
It's 5 minutes.